far more than we've done as far as what's actually there in the scientific literature. After World War II, for example, the Soviets set up large agencies, large organizations. For example, one of them is staffed with something like 2,000 PhDs. And their job is to digest the literature of the West, the scientific literature. And they bought all the journals, everything that could be bought, copies gotten, loaded it on boats, carried it to the Soviet Union, and they went through and digested the whole thing. There's never been such an effort as that in the West. Not at all. Not when you actually sit down and just methodically chew through all the literature. The literature of the West is really very rich in effects and things that have been pointed out in obscure papers that nobody's ever done anything at all about. We're in such a rush to publish or perish that it's always get on with something else. And in the West, it seems to be that anything revolutionary takes us about 50 years to drag out of there and start doing something about it.
Mm.
The Soviet Union took to heart, and in some of my papers I give quotes from some of the Soviet books on military doctrine, they took to heart the U.S. development of the atomic bomb in secret, and then the sudden use of this against an enemy by total surprise. And they decided that was a fundamental mechanism for modern war. And they state this kind of thing in some of their military books. And so they've done that to a high art. They actually look at science as being the main thing that's going to feed the new weapons, and they have actively looked for the new atomic bombs in the new areas. And they've been successful. They've scarfed up everything that's in the literature and digested it and took it from there. So also with the fantastic work of Dr. T.H. Morey, who had built free energy devices, and by the way, the devices could do some things besides free energy. Before World War II, the Soviet Union did obtain the plans of how that device was built, and they got that shortly before World War II. So, putting all that stuff together, they have actually made a science of raising or going after obscure areas of science that hold great promise if they can be developed, and putting the resources of the state behind them to see if they can't do that.
Mm.
Now, we do that, too, to a certain degree, but certainly not anything at all like the Soviet Union does it. As far as the space weapons and all of that, I'm not familiar with the particular book that you mentioned. Sunspot activity, yes, the Soviet Union, again, has had a great effort and done particularly some excellent mathematical work in correlating all kinds of phenomena. Diseases with sunspot activity, magnetic field changes, gravitational changes, all sorts of cycles and rhythms and so forth in nature. They probably have done far more of that work than anybody else in the world. And a little bit of it they've published, but certainly they've looked at the effects of everything against everything else and seeing how the correlations, how they do or do not correlate. It is a fact in their papers in this country pointing out there are correlations to be gained between things like sunspot and spread of disease and other natural rhythms with the spread of disease. So that is, you know, at least recognized in our literature, but not to the extent that the Soviets have studied it.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the swastika, I really don't know the background of the how it was the people there in Germany, Hitler and so forth, the Nazi party hit upon the swastika.
Mm-hmm. Could you mention the effect, I talked to you before in another radio show last week about the use of Tesla's death ray in Afghanistan?
Yes, what apparently happens, there's some incidents there that are very strange. The Soviets are using Afghanistan as a testing ground. For example, that's not really the regular Soviet army fighting there. That's what we would call the Ready Reserve. And what they're really doing is testing their training and the state of training and the functioning of the equipment and so forth. Because there's a large number of troops, really millions, that they intend to be able to activate very quickly in full units so that they can go from the present size of the armed forces to a huge army very quickly indeed. And they're testing out the state of training and everything of those troops. One of the things that happens, they're using gas, for example, against the rebels. Now, they're using mustard gas and nerve gas and some other gases, and gas kills people. But it takes a while, even for nerve gas, to kill folks. They kick a while. If you've ever seen an animal killed with nerve gas, the animal goes into violent convulsions, and it takes at least a few seconds, you know, like half a minute or so, to die. And the same for a human being. And so some of the people die with those kinds of symptoms. But some of them die with a special kind of symptom. They die as if their entire nervous system suddenly quit working. Not another nerve impulse was fired anywhere in the brain or the body. The body simply collapses instantly like a limp dish rag wherever it was when it's hit with that one. Now, they always associate that, apparently, with the Hind helicopters. When the helicopter comes in and fires gas rockets, apparently it lets go something which causes this kind of death also when they test it. They always test it, apparently, with the gas, so that we'll think it's some kind of gas. But apparently it is a tactical scalar weapon, because if your nervous system gets hit with a sudden violent pulse of scalar weapons or even a continuous beam, that's exactly the symptoms that happen when you get enough of it in the dose. You get instant death everywhere in the body all at once. And there's never another nerve signal that goes anywhere. The entire nervous system extinguishes instantly. Now, the other effect that happens when you do that to a body, very strange things happen to the body. For one thing, it doesn't decay very fast at all. And there's at least one recorded incident in a paper in Philadelphia where the guerrillas had been gone from a village, forced out of a village, and the Soviets came in and killed everybody left in the village. But they killed them with this kind of weapon. And over a month later, when the rebels got back, none of the bodies had decayed. They were still laying exactly where they had fallen, and not a one of them had decayed. And so they were able to bury them and so forth exactly as they were, without any decay or anything like that. So there are some anomalies that indicate they have used at least close-range tactical scalar weapons against the Afghans and tested them out. Mm. And that was the Soviet Hind helicopters doing that.
Mm. All right, Edson, so you see what you got going there?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
All right, goody.
Thank you very much, Tom, for that. The use of the tactical weapons also is something that just needs to be brought to the attention of everybody. You're on Open Mind tonight with Thomas E. Bearden. I'm Bill Jenkins.
One more call here. Brian, you're on. Can make it as quick as you can.
Sure. I was speaking to a friend of mine tonight who works in the defense industry, and he asked me a question I couldn't answer. He said, if the Soviet Union does indeed have these scalar weapons, why have they been in such a mad scramble to steal our military technology in recent years?
The simple reason is they go at all corners of the board, all across the board. They want to get, for example, the computer technology we have, because they're well behind us in that.
Mm.
They are not as far along in the chip technology as we are. They want to get that, particularly VLSI and so forth.
I see.
Anything at all that will further their aims or their effort, they go after. So they go after it right across the board.
Including missile technology?
Including missile technology, anything else they can get their hands on. The other thing is they want to know exactly where we are, too.
Oh. Yeah, that would make sense.
So now you have the question answered for you, friend.
I sure do.
It wasn't a bad question, but...
No, that's a good question, because, you know, you do see them going after everything. For example, a few years back, they got a hold of precision machines to make ball bearings and thereby increase the accuracy of their ICBMs, and that's bad when they do that.
Okay, Brian, does that help you?
Yes, it does, Bill.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Pass that along to your friend. And we've just passed out of time here on Open Mind. Tom Bearden, thank you again for a really informative night. Fascinating.
My pleasure, Bill.
And the pictures that Tom talked about will be in an upcoming article of mine in Let's Talk magazine. You'll see a lot of it. We'll go over some of it again about the weather war. Next week, we'll be talking about the Kabbalah. One of the world's leading experts about it, and there are some strange and amazing stories to be told. We'll do it next Saturday night on Open Mind.
Happy celebration 24.